Okay, good morning. Apologies in advance. I'll have to cut this session a bit short, but I'd like to finish off our basic discussion of cellular networks, and then we will get started with sort of looking at specific cases of cellular networks. We're going to start with taking a look at a few of the details of GSM, which is sort of ubiquitous in the cellular telephony world. And so we'll get probably halfway through that, and then we'll follow on with sort of where sort of the networks are moving on from GSM. Okay, so last time we were at a very abstract level looking at how we could achieve the goals of these cellular networks, which is sort of universal coverage and mobility. And the issue that we were primarily concentrating on was this idea of coverage. How do you provide radio access over sort of a broad physical area? And we said that the way you did this was you laid out base stations, so access points, in some sort of regular pattern. Those base stations sort of had a relatively finite coverage area because of the fact that power, again, decreases exponentially with distance. And so we defined the coverage area of these base stations as cells, and observed that if cells were far enough apart from each other, they could use the same channel allocations. So they could use the same frequency, provided you haven't had enough distance between them. Okay. So we then grouped the cells into clusters and then said whatever our entire channel set was, we'll divide it up amongst these clusters and then repeat the clusters over and over again. Okay. And we found out or observed that what was important in terms of the signal interference ratio was the ratio of the reuse distance, which is the distance between two cells using the same channel, and the size of the cell radius. Okay. And if you sort of think about it, then those two factors also give you how many cells you need in a cluster. So that's just sort of a geometric thing. Okay. And then the number of cells in the cluster in turn determines the number of channels you can have per cell, since you're, again, each cluster shares out this whole channel set. So the more cells, the less channels per cell. Okay. We then looked at, and then one last sort of twist on that was CDMA systems, where, again, all channels are used within each cell, and that was then treated as a separate case. We then looked at traffic engineering, and so the idea here is we have these channels. We have a certain number per cell. It gives you a certain number per area. Certain number of users can be accommodated per area. But we observed that they're not all going to want to use the system all the time, which is good, because if they were all trying to use it all the time, you'd essentially have to have a channel per user. Okay. So the Erlang B formula relates the usage behavior of the users, which is characterized as a traffic intensity. And so it gives sort of a measure of, on average, how many users are in the system at any time or needing to make a call at any time. And that's normalized according to how long the calls last. And it relates that to the number of channels that you have in the system, which we called trunks. And then, since this was probabilistic, it's all sort of averages, there's always a possibility you're going to have, at any given time, too many users for the system to handle, so more users than channels. And the grade of service, and if you have too many users, then you lose calls. So the grade of service indicated what percentage of the calls, on average, would be dropped. Okay. And so we observed that there's a formula. We're not going to be concerned with deriving the formula or worrying about where it came from. But from our point of view, we have a formula that relates these three quantities, and we can use it to study how many users can be accommodated in cellular systems. And typically we do that on a cell. We look at sort of one cell at a time, okay, and sort of how many users can be accommodated within a cell. In reality, the picture's a little more complicated because users are mobile, and so not only are they sort of standing somewhere and deciding, oh, I think I'll make a call or I won't make a call, but in the process of calling, they are also moving from cell to cell. And so some of the assumptions that are made to utilize the airline B formula don't exactly happen with cellular systems, but it still gives you sort of a starting point, a sort of first pass at determining sort of whether you have enough capacity in your system. And we observe that typically, again, it's a complex issue, and in addition to sort of the users not behaving like you might like or like it would be ideal for the formula, additionally, the cells aren't really laid out like we have been assuming so far. So it's only sort of an approximation, and typically, in reality, you have sort of very complex simulation models to study problems like this. Okay, so we have one final topic, sort of just generically in terms of cellular systems, and then, as I say, we'll move on to GSM. The final topic is the idea of what tricks can we use to increase the capacity of the system. Okay. And so by increasing capacity, we mean accommodating more users in the system. Okay. And so there's a number of things we can do, which generally break down to playing around with the channel assignments. So at the moment, we have our cells, and each one gets exactly the same number of channels. Well, potentially, that's not useful. Potentially, you know, again, your users are going to be spread out sort of physically somehow. And if you have more users in one cell than another, ideally, obviously, you'd like to have more channels in the cell with more users. Okay. So we can look at sort of moving channels from cell to cell. Okay. This problem, some this is done to some extent, but it becomes rapidly a complex problem. Okay. In addition, we can look at how we lay out our cells, how we actually produce cells. And there's a number of techniques for sort of doing it differently. The idea of cell splitting is to is to reduce the size of your cells. And what we'll see is we can sort of essentially scale down the size of the cells and sort of increase the capacity that way. But there are drawbacks to that in that you need sort of, there's a limit to how small you can make a cell, and also you need additional equipment to do that. Okay. Cell sectoring is dividing the cells into sectors and using directional antennas to deal with them, and assigning different sub-channels to each sectoring. And so that can be accomplished with sort of the same base station with a bit more equipment involved, but we'll see it's again devised. It's further subdividing the channel sets, so there can be problems with that. And microcells, again, is a way of sort of dividing up the channel sets within the individual cells. So we'll look at these strategies in turn. Again, so far we've looked at our basic fixed channel assignment method, so everybody gets exactly the same. And again, what we can do is change that allocation based on, well, maybe what we know about sort of congestion within any part of the network. Okay. So if we know certain cells are going to be more congested than others, then we can try and allocate more channels to those cells. Okay. But this is still done sort of in a fixed manner. Okay. Now, again, the problem with that is that there is mobility within the system, so you may have some cells that just because of their location you know are going to be busier than others, but generally those sort of busy spots tend to move around the network. And so a dynamic channel allocation method tries to sort of on the fly reassign channels to deal with sort of areas of congestion. Okay. And the problem with doing anything dynamically is that it becomes a bit of a complicated optimization problem. And then, so we have the halfway house somewhere in between, where we have sort of subsets of fixed allocations and then subsets then of dynamically allocable channels. Okay, so if we have our fixed assignment strategy, then as it says, the channels are assigned to specific cells, and then you can make your connection only if a channel's available. And so this is not very flexible in dealing with varying amounts of requests in the system. Okay. So it's possible to sort of have slight additions to this fixed strategy which allows for more flexibility. And so one method would be simple borrowing. And so if a cell has used all its channels, then it borrows from one of its neighbors. Okay, so you can think of this all as happening within a cluster, for instance. Okay. And in this case, the switching center is going to have to keep a record of which channels are borrowed, and those channels have to be locked so that none of the other cells can use them. Okay. And so up to a certain point, this improves your capacity, but beyond that point, if you start taking too many channels from the neighboring cells, then they in turn cannot deal with their user capacity. Okay, and so after a certain point, then this leads to inefficiencies. So a halfway house there is a hybrid channel assignment, and in that case, the for each cell, the channels are divided into two categories, one which can't be borrowed and a second which can. Okay. And so the idea there is you'll never leave any given cell without at least a minimal capacity. Okay. And in borrowing with ordering, you're allowed some flexibility as to how many channels you have in each of the sort of two categories, those that can be borrowed and those that can't. Okay. At the other end of the spectrum, again, we have dynamic strategies. And with a dynamic strategy, you don't make any permanent assignment of channels. And you just assign channels as calls are requested. Okay. And so here you have to have some centralized decision point that determines when channels can be allocated. And so you have to go back to the MSC as the entity which will have enough information about the overall state of the system to allow for the channels to be to allow for a decision to be made. Okay. And so whenever a call is requested, the MSC then determines what channel that call should be allocated. And it's obviously going to try and, again, distribute the load throughout the network and attempt to minimize the probability that future calls will be blocked. Okay, so again, if you're in a congested area, it's going to have to sort of think carefully about what channel to allocate. Again, if it's taking it, because then, you know, that channel cannot then be used by sort of neighboring areas or cells. Okay. Now, if you sit down and think about doing that, you're going to realize that it's complex to do that. Okay. And sort of, again, decisions that are made at one point can have impact on the ability to serve future requests. So for lightly loaded systems, you can get capacity improvements. But as sort of more and more requests come in, it becomes harder and harder to actually find channels to satisfy those requests. And it's difficult to sort of do reallocation and sort of satisfy the requests of all your customers. Okay. And finally, with flexible strategies, we're trying to combine the sort of advantages of both. And again here, the idea is that each cell is going to have a certain fixed allocation. Okay. So again, you're not going to want to get to the state where some cell has no channels to allocate because they've all been taken by neighboring cells. So you'll leave some minimal allocation for all the cells, and then for the additional allocation, then the MSC can try and allocate the channels sort of as the requests arrive and according to the traffic intensity. Okay. And so that can either be done sort of on a planned basis if you sort of have a good idea of sort of what your traffic patterns are like through the day. You can try to sort of, again, migrate capacity from one part of the network to another. Or that can be done on the fly just as you sort of measure traffic at sort of any given moment. Okay. So, CDMA presents obviously a different set of problems. Again, if you recall, the signal interference ratio is affected by the number of users in a given cell and then the number of users in adjoining cells. Okay. And so basically the goal with CDMA is going to be to reduce the number of users in a given cell. And so as a cell becomes more congested, the size of the cell, size of the cell shrinks. And say that three times fast. And therefore, users are essentially, as the size shrinks, users will find themselves in not the original cell, but in the adjacent cells. So essentially, you have a handover to hopefully less congested cells. Okay, so you can play around with the allocation of channels, and you can also play around with the layout of your cells. Okay. And so we'll look at three techniques. Cell splitting, and cell splitting is based on this idea that, again, the capacity of your system in terms of the number of channels you can have per cell is governed by the ratio of the reuse distance to the cell radius. And what we already saw last time was that this meant that you could essentially, in terms of just coverage area, you can make your cells bigger or smaller. Okay? And so, if you think about it, sort of for the larger one, you have a certain number of channels allocated. And if you look then at the smaller one, you have four times the number of channels allocated for the same area. Okay. So just essentially by shrinking the size of your cells, you get more capacity in the system per area. Okay. So, you can, so the general rule of thumb is in a congested area, you need sort of a lot of small cells, and then in less congested areas, you can have larger cells. Okay, and as we saw, the reuse factor remains constant, therefore the capacity per cell is constant, but you have more cells covering an area, therefore you have more access for that area. Okay. And so, again, we see that our power is related to the size of our cells, and we're increasing. And so in order to shrink the cells, we also sort of decrease the power at which the cells are, that which the base stations are transmitting. Okay. So what we end up with is we have more cells, more capacity. The power levels are dropping, again, by the factor of 1/2 to the n gamma, so where n is sort of the factor by which we're shrinking our cells. And the system capacity is increasing by, well, that should actually be 2 to the n gamma. So your system capacity is increasing, that's correct. Okay. So, what's not to like about this? We've got our power reducing, our capacity increasing. Well, there's a couple of problems. For one thing, again, we need a base station per cell. So the more cells you have, the more costly your system. Secondly, we're decreasing our power levels. And that's fine in terms of the signal interference ratio, but we can't forget that there's also a signal to noise ratio to be considered. Okay. So in order to decode your signal, the signal has to be received at a certain power level to overcome just atmospheric noise. So if you can't do that, then you can't decode your signal. So you can't endlessly decrease the power at which you transmit. And finally, the smaller your cell sizes, if you take a mobile user, the faster a rate at which they're traveling from one cell to the next. Okay. And handover is not an instantaneous process. It can take on order of seconds. So if you're traveling through the zones too fast, you can't achieve a seamless handover. Okay. So the next two techniques that we look at, cell sectoring and microcell zones, seek to sort of keep the cell sizes at a reasonable level while reducing our signal interference ratio. Okay. So in cell sectoring, we divide our cells up like pies. And we then allocate sort of subsets of the channel set to each sector, each wedge of our pie. Okay. And now we use directional antennas for transmission from the base station, and therefore the number of cells that will interfere with our sort of base cell decreases. Okay, they'll only interfere if they're within the zone of the cell. Okay, so in our example, if we divide the cells up into thirds, we decrease the number of interfering cells by a third. Okay, so before we assumed we had the six closest cells would interfere. Now only two of those cells will interfere. Okay. And so in that way, again, you're reducing the signal interference ratio by that factor of 3. Okay. So we need sort of additional equipment, additional antennas and base stations to handle each of the sectors. We do have more frequent handovers than between cells and sectors. Again, unless that everybody's sort of evenly split, this is not evenly divided over the range. This is not going to help a lot, but it'll help some. Okay, so again, you've increased your signal interference ratio by a factor of 3, and your reuse factor as well, okay, by a factor of 3. And so we see that, again, in our example, if we assume we have a required signal interference ratio of 5, we would have a reuse factor of 4, so you'd need 4 cells within your set, within your cluster for a sectorized system, and you'd need 14 for an omnidirectional system. This means you're going to have sort of more channels available per cluster. Okay. So the pluses, again, are we've increased the value of the SIR, so you've got a stronger signal to the interference. You've kept your cell size larger in the sense that you need less cells per cluster. And so you can reuse the available channels more frequently. Okay. But as before, we need additional equipment and we have additional handover. Okay. So in our final structure, we try and sort of alleviate those problems and sort of specifically the sort of channel allocation and the fact that your channels are sort of allocated to a fixed either sector or cell, and therefore, again, as you move, you have to change channels, and the channels are being allocated to smaller areas. Okay, so in our final system, we come up with a method of reducing the range at which our channels have to be transmitted, but still allowing the channels to be shared out over an entire cell. Okay. And again, we do this using directional antennas. We direct our transmissions in. We have the antennas at the edge of the cells, and we direct our transmissions inward to the cells. Okay. And so in this way, with a number of channels, we can cover the cell with sort of a reduced zone of coverage per antenna. Okay. And so again, if your zone of coverage is smaller, you can reduce the power at which you're transmitting, etc. Okay. Now what we do, though, is we keep the cell's channel set free, and so any user within the cell can be assigned any of the channels. And what happens is just as you move the antenna over which that channel connection is made changes. Okay, so if a user moves around between the cells, we switch the antenna that they're connected to. Okay. So it's not a full handover process, so you don't have the issues with handover, but it allows the sharing of channels over the entire area of the cell. So if all of your users happen to be in sort of this bottom range of the cell, yeah, you can still allocate, you can allocate all of the channel set of the cell in that range. Okay, which again is not the idea of either microcells or, sorry, not microcells, so split cells or sectorized cells where any portion of the original cell would only have some of the channels to allocate. So here, all of the channels can be allocated, and there's no issues of handover. Okay. And so, again, it has this advantage of better channel reuse while still reducing the power at which you have to transmit and therefore sort of improving signal to interference ratios. Okay, so that's all we're going to say for sort of our generic systems. We've looked at sort of how we lay out the cells, how we sort of analyze the capacity in the cells, how we try and maximize the capacity within the cells. And operationally, we've looked at sort of how calls are set up using this system. What we're going to move on to now is a look at sort of actual okay, so we're going to have a look at actual cellular telephony data networks. Sort of the survey will take over more than, I'd say, two lectures to go through. And we're going to sort of examine the concept of sort of the various networks being an evolutionary process. So we start with GSM, which had as a goal providing basic voice connectivity, digital voice connectivity, I should say. And then sort of the sort of goal as sort of time moves on is to introduce IP data transmission to increase the data rates, so just to increase the overall rate at which the system operates, etc. And so pretty much that's built on a base of GSM, and then sort of the networks have evolved from that point. Okay. So for today's lecture, just sort of looking at a survey of what are the issues with GSM networks. I posted the John Skourias tutorial, and that's quite good and about as readable as it gets. Any telephony network is sort of a large collection of a lot of details, a lot of acronyms, and so to some extent you just have to suffer through it. But I think this tutorial sort of brings out a lot of the main points pretty well. And hopefully we'll get them in the lecture as well. Okay, so we're going to say a few words on sort of the evolution of cellular networks. Then we'll take a little break, and I'd like to get through, well, the basic architecture of GSM and then some of the radio link aspects. Hopefully we'll get to the channel structure. It's one of the more complicated parts of the GSM structure, and so that would be sort of a nice break point. You can go away and ponder channel structures for GSM. Okay. So cellular systems are a little over 30 years old now. Okay. The original cellular systems provided analog voice connections, which matched the current, or at the time, the telephony standards, which would also have been analog. Okay. And so one of the first was the AMPS system piloted by Bell Labs. But it was one among many systems being developed at the same time, sort of across the world. Okay. So none of the systems were at all interoperable. The systems were analog, which severely limited the amount of connectivity that could be provided. But you still had within a decade, you had a worldwide market of about 20 million for this sort of system. Okay. So the primary distinguishing characteristic between first and second direction, first and second generation networks is the switch to digital signaling. Okay, and sort of in terms of the voice, it's improved the quality, the capacity, and the coverage, and it also allowed sort of at least minimal data services to be supported. Okay. The orientation of these networks was still circuit switched, so still you provided connections, end-to-end connections, and those then the channels were that were allocated on the basis of the sort of voice transmission requirements. Okay, and then data slots into that as well as it can. Okay. And again, a number of technologies appeared, and a number of systems were developed. By far, the most dominant, again, is the GSM. And we'll see later that it's a time and frequency multiplex system. But we also see that CDMA was proposed for the first time as a multiplexing technique for 2G systems. Okay. So GSM is the dominant 2G technology. In the beginning of 2006, it was 82% of the global market and represented billions of customers, or was used by billions of customers. Okay, now, again, it's been gradually replaced by 3G systems, but again, typically they'll have the GSM as their core anyway. Okay, and so it had the obvious, again, advantages over analog, and it's a good starting place to look at sort of how modern cellular systems operate, okay, because all the sort of basic building blocks are still there, and we can discuss then how they've changed for sort of 3G systems. Okay. So 3G systems have as their goals, again, increasing data rates, and supporting both packet-switched and circuit-switched data transmission. Okay, so, and again, it's an evolutionary process to getting there. A number of standards sort of move in that direction without sort of being there in an ideal sense. And these standards are called 2.5G. Okay. So the one we'll examine is, we'll look at GPRS, and GPRS essentially, again, is built on the basic GSM network, but it allows for additional packet handling functionality. Okay. True 3G is sort of slow in coming. It is actually now making some penetration into the market. I think that when I say currently, I'm talking about in 2009, Italy was the leader within Europe. Let's see. We got about 40% penetration in the U.S. In Japan, it's 90%, and this is accredited to it being actually made very attractive for the customers to switch. There's very low tariffs there. Okay, so it's being taken up now, which even last year there would have been a much lower take-up rate. Okay, and again, the ideals here are to have high data rates, even sort of with mobility, to have sort of universal access, so worldwide access, and to be able to handle both circuit and packet switching and support your sort of higher end functionality, your multimedia and interactive services. Okay. The ITU is responsible for the standardization of 3G, and the primary, again, evolutionary feature of 3G over 2.5G is in the radio interfaces. So in that that sort of end user connectivity, and so far 6 interfaces have been defined, and users are able to choose between those. Obviously, if you want your worldwide accessibility, then basically your handsets are going to have to accommodate multiple ones of these standards. Okay, and so the horizon then is 4G, and the main features of 4G are even higher data rates, all IP services, and the support of sort of heterogeneous networking, so allowing connectivity between not just mobile operators, but also other access like Wi-Fi and WiMAX. Okay. The proposed standard is LTE Advanced, Long-Term Evolution Advanced, and it's governed by the third generation partnership project, 3GPP, and you can sort of have a look at that on the website with the URL provided. Okay, so let's take a short break here, say 10 minutes, and then we'll jump into some of the gory details of GSM. Thank you.